Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. You'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you are about to hear are real. It's a 12-step meeting on the air, so kick back, grab a cup of coffee, and listen in. Because you ever wondered what went on inside of those 12-step meetings but were afraid to ask, you are going to find out right now. We have our friends from Alcoholics Anonymous to share with us their experience, strength, and hope. We have couples in recovery, and we're going to find out and get their perspective on what that's like, what that's all about. But the team up right now is Adam and Susan, and we're going to start off with Adam. Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about what it was like, what it's like now, what it's like being sober and in a committed relationship with someone else that's sober.
Well, just to answer that question first, I will tell you it's an amazing, amazing experience to be sober and to have a happy and healthy relationship mm-hmm. for once in my life. Wasn't from the past when I was active. My experiences were not happy and healthy relationships. Most of my relationships, I could tell you, probably ended up with claw marks at the end of them. That pretty much sums them up. But, you know, I mean, it's an amazing, amazing process. You know, I think I would describe myself as an alcoholic pretty much from, you know, right out of my mother's womb.
Yeah.
You know, I had those feelings, those attitudes, the feelings of feeling less than.
Sure.
Not good enough, uncomfortable in my own skin, you know, and it was one of those things that as soon as I picked up my first drink, you know, all of a sudden I felt okay.
When was that?
I'd probably say probably about 13 years old. You know, everybody talks about when was your first drink, and I don't know if I can really remember specifically, but I do actually remember one point, you know, going into my parents' liquor cabinet and I think trying every single bottle of, you know, alcohol that was in there and mixing them all together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what a shock the next morning waking up feeling like, you know, the worst hangover you could ever imagine.
Sure.
But, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic household. My father, I grew up, you know, finding my father having bottles of alcohol hidden around the house. And, you know, I remember committing that to myself, making a promise that I was never going to be an alcoholic. I was never going to drink like my father did. But the truth is pretty much from the first time I picked up my first drink, I drank alcoholically.
Hmm.
You know, but it was what it was. You know, it worked for a little while, you know, through high school.
What do you mean by it worked?
You know, it was definitely one of those things that helped me to feel okay for the moment.
Okay.
You know, when I would go out with my friends and, you know, everybody felt all confident or would, you know, be able to easily could go talk to different people or pick up girls or whatever the case was. You know, it was a way that I actually could fit in with them because
mm-hmm.
when I put a couple of drinks in my system and definitely a couple of drugs in my system later on, you know, I was able to open up and I was able to feel comfortable for a little while.
Hmm.
You know, and I would tell you that, you know, I looked for any opportunity to get into that altered state, as I like to refer to it. You know, so I definitely, you know, when I went into college, I was the type of guy that, you know, if I could figure out a way to not go to class and to drink and to drug, I would do it. You
mm-hmm.
know, anything that I could beat the system. I was always looking for that angle to beat the system. You know, and I sought out a profession, you know, while I was in college that definitely enabled my drinking and drugging. I entered into the nightclub business, which, as I'm sure you can understand, was definitely the ideal profession to be able to enable me to drink. You know, and I took to it like a fish to water, I guess you'd describe, because it, you know, for the first time when in my life, I felt like, you know, really popular because people wanted to know me because I was in the nightclub business. And,
right.
You know, it was awesome, you know, and that and adding, you know, alcohol into the mix and definitely dry goods, too. You know, wow, this was the dream job. So I barely got out of college. You know, I did okay as far as grades, but, you know, it was more along the lines of that I was, you know, figuring out ways that I could get through college without having to do a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I proceeded to find the next ideal profession after I got out of college that would enable my drinking and drugging, and that was Wall Street. And, you know, again, once again, I will tell you that was a profession that for me, you know, it was an excuse to drink and get high.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, you know, it was a tremendous amount of stress on Wall Street, you know, and there was obviously a lot of drinking that went on around in that type of environment. And I definitely took advantage of it. It was, you know, at a young age, I guess at the time I had reached what I thought were some of the financial successes that I had always dreamed of when I was younger. And you know, the truth is that I was miserable in the middle of it because I realized, like, when I was young, I thought that maybe if I had money or financial, you know, security, mm-hmm. that then I would feel okay. Then I would feel comfortable in my skin. And, you know, the reality is that actually I felt worse once I had achieved that point, because it really hit me that, you know, it was not the solution was not an outside solution. It was a problem that was within inside of me. That feeling of feeling less than, no matter what I had on the outside, you know, and as a young guy, I mean, I had a lot of the outside stuff that I think a lot of people thought, you know, with the cars and the women and the apartments, that I think a lot of people thought was, you know, this great lifestyle.
So did you, like, if you thought you could get the right job, the right car and the right girl, everything would just be...
was my thought. But the reality is actually I felt worse. You know, I felt it was really it just really brought it to a head that this was, you know, I was miserable.
Because you would achieve these things and it still wouldn't satisfy you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I really came to a point where that, you know, I guess I thought I was depressed. I actually went to a therapist that at that time, you know, diagnosed me with depression.
How old were you at that time?
I was about 27.
Okay.
27 years old. And
how much were you drinking at that point?
Every day.
Are you
know,
a daily
every
drinker?
Day. Yeah. Yeah, I was a daily drinker. You know, I was the guy that, you know, at 11:30 would go down to the bar or to the restaurant and pretty much open up the place. And, you know, I would go back to the office for a little while. And then, you know, as soon as the market closed, I would run right back down to that bar and I would pretty much stay throughout the night.
Same with the dry goods, too?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I was always in that bathroom stall. So, you know, I mean, and it wasn't because I was going to the bathroom a lot, you know. you know, and I was the type of drinker that, you know, thought that, you know, because I drank martinis, or if I drank scotch, or if I drank something that was, you know, a little bit more kind of a mature or upscale, then therefore I really wasn't an alcoholic because, you know, I wasn't drinking 12 packs of Budweiser,
right.
Or, you know, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't homeless, you know, so therefore I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, I had a job. I made a nice living, and you know, I on the outside, maybe it looked like I had it kind of holding it together.
But what about this depression diagnosis? They didn't know about the alcoholism and the drug abuse, or did you talk to them about it?
You know, it's an amazing thing. You know, my recollection on this is that, you know, I clearly told my doctor that I was drinking every day and using other substances, and you know, he said, well, you probably have depression, and he put me on a medication. He put me on Prozac. You know, and
alcoholism.
You know, I think I don't know. You know, meanwhile, this was supposed to be a doctor that had all, you know, had great insight into alcoholism and drug addiction.
Okay.
He had been authored on it and what have you. And so he put me on 80 milligrams of Prozac a day. And I remember I took 100 milligrams because, you know, more would be better.
Right.
And, you know, meanwhile, I do have a recollection. He did say maybe you should lay off, you know, the alcohol for 30 days or so. But I can tell you that, you know, I might have laid off the alcohol for a little while, but I definitely picked up on the other substances,
sure.
while this was all going on. You know, and I'll tell you, therapy consisted of pretty much me walking in, getting my medication, and that was about the extent of it.
You knew that at that point you didn't have a normal relationship with alcohol, right?
Yeah, I knew there was something wrong, but, you know, I was the type of guy that would stop drinking for a little while and then pick up other substances. And, you know, I would hang my hat on the fact that I wasn't drinking for 6 months or a year. Meanwhile, I was using every other substance under the sun in the meantime. So I couldn't exactly pinpoint what it was that was wrong, but I had it figured out that there definitely my life was getting worse. That's the bottom line. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, I thought it was at first just a run of bad luck, you know, and when things started to go wrong at work, and then things started to go wrong in these relationships that I had, and then, you know, systematically, things started to get taken away from me, you know, whether it was, you know, the house, the cars, whatever. It was essentially, it all was removed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess they say the alcohol is the ultimate remover of relationships. And it really robbed me of everything, including myself. You know, it came to a point where I had no idea who I was. you know, what I would just tell you is at my bottom, I mean, it ended up that, to sum it up, is that, you know, I was counting change to put gas in my car that I didn't own. You know, I was taking cold showers in a house that no longer was mine because it was in foreclosure. Mm. And, you know, I took cold showers because the oil man hadn't been paid and he siphoned all the oil out of my tank, you know. And there was no money to eat, you know. So it was and there was no one left, you know. There was no one around. No one had – everyone had heard my story and you know, the friends all left. What a surprise.
Where was your family in all this?
You know, I think my family really pretty much had written me off at this point. You know, they still would take the occasional call from me, but they were not interested in really being supportive. And, you know, for that, I will tell you, I'm very grateful. You know, I have no regrets about, you know, where my bottom took me to, because, you know, I think if I had a dollar more or one drink less, the reality is that, you know, I wouldn't have found AA and I wouldn't have gotten sober. And that's what it's all about, you know. One thing in sobriety that I've realized is that, you know, there have been a series of events in my life that have happened, you know, when I was active and also while I've been sober, that on the surface looked like these horrible situations. But the reality is I can tell you how I could look at each one of those events and tell you how they have, in almost all of those instances, been the greatest blessings that have ever happened in my life.
Like what?
First example, you know, finding out that I was an alcoholic, discovering that, you know, on the surface, initially I was like, this is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. You know, me being an alcoholic, I can't drink with like normal people. What about New Year's? What about weddings? What about, you know, my birthday? Mm-hmm. What about going out to a nightclub? What about going out to dinner and having a bottle of wine with dinner? You know, I never really had one bottle of wine. Let's not kid each other, you know, but the bottom line is that, you know, finding out I was an alcoholic at that initial moment or for that, you know, early on in sobriety, I thought I had been cursed with this awful disease. But the reality is I can tell you that finding out I was an alcoholic and doing something about it, pursuing a program of recovery, has turned out to have given me a life really beyond my wildest dreams. And that is just so amazing. You know, I actually get a chill even when I say it today. You know, in early sobriety, I'll tell you, it was not easy. You know,
tell me about early sobriety. What was that like? Because you were fairly young when you came in, right?
I was. I was 30 years old.
Did you feel, did you have a hard time connecting? Was it an older crowd mostly?
I didn't have a hard time at all connecting. I think that, you know, when I walked into my first AA meeting, the truth is that was for the first time in my life, outside of when I picked up alcohol early on, it was for the first time in my life that I actually felt comfortable.
Okay.
You know, I could actually open up and be who I really truly was as a person. I didn't have to put on this show. I had this puppet show going on in front of me. I was so afraid that you were going to see behind the kind of the veil that I had created, the outside, you know, persona that I had created. I was so afraid that you were going to find out that, you know, who I was behind that veil. So I can tell you that when I walked into my first AA meeting, I pretty much almost right out of the gate felt comfortable. And that was the amazing thing. You know, there were other people out there that had the same feelings, the same attitudes, the same just perspective on life that I had, you know, and you know, clearly my perspective, you know, early on was off. And, you know, still to this day, you know, coming up on 5 years, I mean, my perspective is hopefully still improving on a daily basis. But I can tell you, in my first, you know, first couple of years of sobriety, I basically went bankrupt. I got divorced.
Back up. Why did you go bankrupt? What happened?
I had lost everything. I had been almost kicked out of the business that I was in. I, you know, really, no one really wanted to hire me. The company that I was with at the time, barely, you know, I really couldn't make up for all the financial wreckage that I had created when I was active.
So your reputation was blown in your business? It was
basically. But, you know, listen, through sobriety, I was able to recover it. You know, by continuing to try to do the next right thing, my life started to get better and staying sober. You know, I actually got divorced. I actually spent a little time, a short stint in prison, while I was, early on in
what for?
Actually non-payment of my mortgage. I was held in contempt of court during my divorce proceedings. And the judge, I hadn't paid my mortgage for a couple of months and I had been ordered to by the judge. And, he proceeded to arrest me in court and,
wow.
and put me away for about 6 days. But,
oh,
you know, I'll say this because I think it's important to understand that I can tell you that at that time I thought this was such a horrible experience and how could this happen to me early on in sobriety? And I can tell you, though, looking back on it today, how I can say that there was so much wonder and so many lessons that came out of that experience. And that has been really pretty much representative of what's happened for me throughout my sobriety today. You know, my life has just continuously gotten better. When I was active, actually, I had met I was on a business trip, sort of, you call it that, in Antigua with somebody I was doing business with. And I, at that time, was with my girlfriend, and he had taken his girlfriend along with him. And we had, you know, been away for about a week or so. And I met this terrific girl, but, you know, I was in the middle of my chaotic relationship at that time with my then girlfriend. And, you know, it was interesting. I met this woman, Susan, and we became friends right out of the gate. But there was nothing intimate about it. There was no really any type of relationship that existed between she and I, other than the fact that we became friends. And, you know, we met up a couple of times after we came back from that trip from Antigua. And I lost touch with her for about two and a half years. And interestingly enough, when I was first introduced to AA, when I had about 90 days, which, you know, they talk about in the program, you know, you go to 90 meetings in 90 days and, mm-hmm. you know, things start to clear up a little bit after that. I think I went to about 150 meetings in my first 90 days. And, you know, it was about on my 90th day, I remembered very clearly there was a woman that was standing by the coffee machine in the back of the meeting. And she said to me, she said, "Adam?" And I said, "Yeah." And, she, you know, I'm like, "Wow, who's this hot blonde that remembers my name?" And, you know, I'm trying to think. I'm going to my memory banks. I'm like, how do I know this girl? You know, where do I know her from? And she said, "You remember when we were in Antigua?" And sure enough, I will tell you that I didn't. But the bottom line is that that actually set off a relationship.
You just heard Adam give his story, and now we're going to hear from Susan the other side of that story. What was that? What was that like listening to Adam talk about, you know, just at the end there, your meeting, your courtship, that sort of thing? What was it like?
I don't know. It always kind of reminds me of the movie When Harry Met Sally.
Okay.
Because the times that Adam and I did meet, you know, were really like kind of poignant moments in our lives where, you know, he had 90 days and, you know, I had a couple of years in the program already. And, you know, just having to deal with facing, you know, someone from your past where, you know, I was wild and crazy and did some, you know, pretty outrageous things in Adam's presence while I was drinking in that trip in Antigua.
Okay.
So,
you got to give us a story now.
It's really not rated for radio. So, yeah, so it was pretty wild to have to like face someone like that. And yet, it's interesting because while we were in Antigua, there was just, we sort of connected at one point in the pool. We were talking about just sort of like life and spirituality and then proceeded to go to like lunch or something. And Adam ordered, you know, shots for the table. And I said, "Shots, it's, you know, it's breakfast or it's lunch or whatever." And he was like, "Yeah, make it doubles." And the interesting thing with Adam was after spending a week with him, I came back to New York and the next day went to my first AA meeting.
Wow.
Because on that trip, I pretty much sat behind a bar one night and looked at every liquor bottle behind the bar. And I thought, drank that, drank every single combination, tried every single liquor. And I was fairly young. I was 21 at the time I went to my first AA meeting.
Wow. So Adam was there basically for your bottom.
Yeah.
And then you come to find him how many years later?
I believe like 2.5.
At his bottom.
Yeah.
When he's coming in as a newcomer.
Yeah.
Wow, that's strange.
Yeah.
That's strange. It's cool, but that's strange.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Yeah. Yeah. I say he literally knew me swinging from the chandeliers.
Okay. All right. Well, let's back up. You came in, you were young. You said you were 21,
yeah,
22. Where did the drinking start for you? How old were you?
You know, I think I was maybe about 15, 16
you were
years
a baby.
Old. Yeah, I was, you know, a freshman in
college or
in
no, high
school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking and drugs or just?
I drank for many, well, not many, I mean many years, all throughout high school. You know, my definition of what an alcoholic was, I grew up with an alcoholic mother.
Okay.
Who used to drink wine from paper cups, and she was very promiscuous.
Okay.
So I believe that if I never, you know, hung around with boys and just never did that, you know, and pretty much stayed a prude for, you know, most of my high school years, I would never be an alcoholic because I thought that's what an alcoholic was. So when I first drank and got drunk, I blacked out and had the spins, and I woke up the next day and I knew I liked it. I knew I was an alcoholic. It's just really strange. Some people just, I had that thought already in my head.
You knew you didn't have a normal relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, I did. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I loved it. And I loved the blacking out. I loved just like kind of checking out.
That didn't scare you?
No, I think that, life scared me. Living, you know, being present in the world really, really frightened me. So to be able to just kind of like numb myself out was, and I didn't start, you know, in my freshman year drinking like every day. No, it wasn't like that. I would, you know, someone would have a party and we'd go to their house and, you know, I was the one that, you know, stole all my mom's liquor and took her car because the town I grew up in, it was the police went on strike when I was like 13. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy. So I drove my mom's car. I would steal her car and drive it to parties and drunk. And it wasn't until I moved a lot and it wasn't until my junior year that I was, you know, I started smoking some pot and, you know, doing like bong hits before I went to like gym class. And, you know, I thought it was really cool. I never had the problem that I never felt cool enough. You know, I was very athletic. I was very, you know, likable. And I never had that problem of like, oh, I felt like I fit in when I drank. When I drank, for me, I felt less afraid. You know, I just growing up with like a scary drunk mom and like no dad around, like, I don't know, the world to me was a pretty scary place. I had no social skills. I had no idea how to communicate or have a confrontation with somebody. So for me, it was just like, wow, I have a problem or I have something to face. I'll just like, let's go out and like have a drink or let's go smoke a joint and like not deal with it.
Sure.
You know, nothing was ever a big deal in my life, and I never just really dealt with anything. And when I was 18, I got a trust fund from did some like really, you know, cheesy, like, you know, catalog modeling when I was a child. And I had this money. And my best friends, whose father was a lieutenant of the police department, introduced me to cocaine. And within a matter of 5 months, my $20,000 had been sniffed up my nose.
Really?
And my sister decided to introduce to me. She was going to Russia for 5 weeks with her college. So I took the rest of that money and went to Russia for 5 weeks and like pretty much detoxed off of cocaine by drinking vodka and drank a lot of vodka because I really realized that, you know, there was no way I was going to get, you know, cocaine in Russia. Right. And I knew that, like, you know, one night I just did way too much, and that prayer, you know, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep if I should die before I wake. And I just really couldn't understand, like, I was a good kid, you know, how, like, you know, I had all the best intentions, and yet, you know, I was a liar. I was lying to my friends. I wasn't honest. You know, just my actions were just horrible, and it just never felt like that was who I was inside. And that night that I woke up the next day from not dying, I really also believed that you know, I could never do cocaine again. So in a sense, it fed my denial that knowing I was an alcoholic, but yet it was like I had that power, I thought, to, you know, cure my own cocaine addiction with drinking. And yeah, so it was pretty wild going to Russia and coming home and just, yeah, my life was not, I didn't have a normal life. I definitely didn't. You know, I moved out of the house when I was, you know, 17 going on 18. And
where were your parents in this?
My father actually, it's interesting. My father, he moved out when I was two and moved to Chicago, and my mom just never kept him around, you know, contact. And when I was, I think I picked up and moved to Greece pretty much. I actually went to beauty school and got a job on Madison Avenue, and one day told my boss that I was going for a cup of coffee and was on an airplane to Puerto Rico the next day and never went back to work.
Really? That went over well.
That was how, you know, pretty much
they got some good coffee in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. And I went down there for 6 months. And then, you know, and that was where my drinking really took off, and because it was so acceptable.
But no one was looking for you? No, I mean, you just kind of dropped out and it didn't really?
No, I didn't know. It was just my mom, and my mom sort of pretty much, you know, told us she never really wanted to have children anyway. I had a sister, and I kept in touch with her, but that was pretty much it. Yeah, but I always say, you know, my mother's, you know, addiction, it was like, you know, what we do in the name of, you know, Jack Daniels, or, you know, what we do in the name of Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
So while I was down there, and then I moved to Greece as well. So living in these islands really fueled being able to drink, you know, in the mornings, in the afternoons, and it was always fun, and it was always, you know, it was an escape. That I came back to America, and I found out that my dad was in AA. And literally, my aunt told me, because he had been a drunk my whole life, literally, I, like, 3 weeks later got on an airplane and went to Wisconsin to see him. And yeah, so I feel like that's how the seed of AA was planted.
How long was he sober at that time?
He went in and out. He eventually drank himself to death when I was 6 months sober.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. At that time, did you get to see him in recovery?
I did.
What was that like?
I did.
While you were active?
Yeah. You know, I didn't drink. I ate a lot of cookies while I was there that weekend.
Okay.
So I just loaded up on sugar.
Okay.
It was really kind of healing for me just to hear his story and to, you know, sort of accept his apologies for what I was able to, you know, have heard and seen of it.
Sure.
And to have someone so openly talk about, like, you know, AA and their sobriety and, you know, making amends and everything. It was sort of, you know, new to me.
Well, maybe, I mean, you know, he planted the seed, and that's maybe made it somewhat comfortable for you to come in when you got here.
Yeah. Actually, I had come into the program and was, you know, surrendered finally. And I was about 6 months into recovery when, And you know, I pretty much sold my answering machine right when I had come into the program. No one was calling, and I needed the money. And, you know, I was riding my bicycle and not using a Metro card, et cetera. So I met this girl in the program, and I had about 6 months of recovery. And she wanted to take me with her to be a sober buddy on a vacation to a carnival in Trinidad. And everyone in AA sort of suggested not to go because it would be pretty dangerous, you know, in means of my recovery, that there would be a lot of drinking. But I really felt confident that I had surrendered. And while I went down there, I actually got a call from the embassy that my father had died. And he had died by, you know, going out one night and, you know, drinking too much and not receiving medical attention. And the beautiful part about it was being down there on, you know, the beach and in this, you know, really kind of, you know, the West Indies. I felt as if it was a spiritual experience for me. It was really, really a deep sense that I knew for the first time in my life I was doing the right thing by being sober, because I felt that the part of him that wasn't strong enough to surrender to this disease, you know, was something that was just being born in me. So it was pretty powerful for me, because quitting drinking has really been the hardest thing I've ever had to do, that I feel like I could pretty much, I was afraid of doing life before this, and being able to surrender to alcoholism has pretty much given me the affirmation and the ability that I can pretty much do life, you know, pretty much anything that, you know, will come in my path, because it was hard stopping.
Talk about it.
I loved to drink. I absolutely loved. I loved pints of, you know, beer. I loved, you know, shots. I loved drinking Goldschlager and Jägermeister and all those really disgusting drinks that would burn your insides. And, you know, it's kind of made it feel like the sunshine, you know, was shining in me. And in the AA Young People's pamphlet, it says it so perfectly. It said, alcohol gave me wings, but it took away the sky. And that's how I felt it was for me. You know, it just made me feel like I could fly, but there was nowhere to ever go. And And I just loved that feeling. So for me, I had a lot of anger. I was a really angry young person who pretty much my family was destroyed by alcoholism. And I always felt like if they can get it, if they could get it, I could be fine. I would be able to be a normal kid. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard for me to have to wake up at the 22 and take responsibility for my life and know that, you know, no one was going to ever do it for me. So that really, really pissed me off. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, I don't know if it was like growing up in an alcoholic household and not having a father around, but if I had a turkey sandwich for lunch, I would tell you I had ham. You know, like I just learned to lie at such a young age.
Why?
I don't know. I think I was ashamed of who I was and ashamed of who my family was. And, you know, my mom being a drunk, and I just felt that, yeah, there was a lot of shame. So it was just easier to make up stories, you know? So when I came into AA, they said how it works is you have to be honest, open, and willing. And I was struck honest, but I wasn't struck gracefully honest.
Okay.
So I became honest kicking and screaming. Yeah. So it was really hard. It was really, really difficult. And it was also hard to, you know, have to take a look in the mirror and see who I had become because, you know, I enjoyed drinking, you know, a Heineken, you know, to an extreme amount. And someone on the show earlier talked about drinking a gallon of wine. And I sit there still to this day, you know, God willing, in July, I'll have 8 years of recovery.
That's amazing.
But I hear a gallon of wine and I think, is that really that much? I don't know. For me, it seems like I would just be feeling like started or good.
But let me ask you, you're 21 or 22 when you got sober, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, you're a
22.
Baby. 22. All your friends are still partying, right?
Well, see, the thing is that, you know, picking up and moving to, I went to cosmetology school and left my hometown and came right to New York.
No, but I mean, like your peers, people your age were all out kind of doing their thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Was it tough not being able to just go and do that, you know, without booze?
I really surrendered to the program. I, you know, went to the diner every night, you know, and pretty much.
So you changed your lifestyle.
I changed my life. I think the poignant moment was this guy, because I got sober in the summer. He was this real hunky guy I was dating, and I was going to go meet him at the Jersey Shore. And he said to me, you know, come and meet me. And I was going to meet my sponsor. And he says, just blow her off. And I said these words that were life-changing. Besides, I'm an alcoholic. I said, I'm not that kind of girl. Mm. That to me was, I was always the kind of girl
right.
would do whatever, whenever, with whoever, you know, that to say that was huge for me. And yeah, you know, I worked in hair salons and everyone was smoking pot. But for me, I felt like AA was this family I had, and it meant more than my like young 22-year-old friends that were like in the hair salons going out and drinking, because when I surrendered to drinking, I knew that my life was going to remain pathetic for the rest of my life if I continued to leave work and go and drink a pint at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just knew that, you know, I was able to look at my family and see, you know, what they had become, and I didn't want to become that.
Mm. So where are you at now? It's 8 years sober, right?
Yeah, 7.5 years sober.
That's
recently married.
Recently married.
Yeah,
that's
to the funny. Right guy this time. Not that I did it the last time, but, you know, to someone who's a friend and, you know, makes me laugh a lot.
Talk to me about recovery in the relationship. Like, how do you guys do it? Do you go to meetings together? Do you not go to meetings together?
Yeah, you know, we have busy lives, you know, with our work Monday through Friday. So, you know, we pretty much just connect at home during the week. But on the weekends, we do tend to go to meetings together.
Mm-hmm.
We do enjoy that.
We go to meetings during the week, but we don't go to the
same. Yeah, we don't go to the same meetings together. Just, recovery together. It's really nice because, you know, for me, it's I have a partner who's, you know, as I said before, who's honest, open, and willing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he understands, you know, and sometimes it's really nice to, here's a perfect example. I spent some time with my sister and I was complaining that, you know, she was getting under my skin, and he goes, well, I get under your skin sometimes, and who's the common denominator? So it's really nice also to have someone who loves me and is supportive of me growing personally, you know,
sure.
And that to me just rocks.
Sure, yeah. Sure. How do you stay out of each other's way in recovery? Like if you're having a bad day or Adam, you're having a bad day. I mean, you know, is the temptation there to be like, oh, you got to go to a meeting or you got to go do something? Or
I do tell him he needs to go to meetings.
At this point, is that it out that maybe we should go to a meeting? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we definitely do at
but
times.
I think we respect each other's, you know, each other's privacy and each other's growth. And, you know, we both have our own paths and then we have our paths together, too. And I think that we both are considerate to one another, and we try to be thoughtful before we react and before we, you know, the attitudes come up, which
sure.
they can,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, especially if you stay away from a meeting for more than a few days, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Does it get ugly? So if you guys aren't both not going, then it's
yeah. We're from the school Meeting Makers Make It.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we make meetings. I do service and I have a sponsor and, you know, currently no sponsees. But yeah, you know, I work the program like my life depends on it because mm-hmm. I believe it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we both agree on that point. Is that this program saved our life, and you know if we were to go out and drink and drug again, you know it's life or death. This program for us, and we take it very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add?
No, I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty accurate. It's nice having a sober partner.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine, you know, I couldn't imagine it any other way. It's really nice.
I think also that one thing is that I would like to add is about that we have a chance here to break the cycle of alcoholic homes. You know,
mm-hmm.
I grew up in an alcoholic household. My wife grew up in an alcoholic household. And, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, when and if we have children, we have a family of our own. We don't have to have our kids grow up in that same type of life.
Absolutely.
And that's what's so beautiful about this program.
Makes
absolutely.
Us very grateful.
Yeah, I mean, how terrific is that?
Absolutely.
You know, that insanity that we actually don't have to live in that insanity anymore.
Adam and Susan, I want to thank you both so much. You are listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew. This is Stepping Out.